So I'm Jenny Goodemo. I'm the executive director here at Wood Library.
And I'm Carrie Magnan. I'm the circulation supervisor and the library's notary. Not available right now. And we alternate. We take turns talking about cases that interest us or something that's in the news. And tonight is my night. And I'm going to talk about some cases from one of my all-time favorite TV shows, Unsolved Mysteries. Is anybody else an Unsolved Mysteries person here? Okay, great. So did you guys watch it when it was first? Back in the 80s and 90s. And now it's, we're going to talk a little bit about where
it was always so creepy. I just remember the theme music.
Believe it or not, there are actually a bunch of different things in that show.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So whenever they do.
You mean like theme songs?
Yeah. So whenever they do something that takes place in West, they play a certain type of music.
Is it Western theme?
It's Western theme.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't even want to say. But you can't, they put out, somebody put out an album on some street. Music and. No, I did not buy it.
Really?
It was only on LPs.
Bad. You're like, so, AJ, I'm going to put on some romantic music. And then you put on that record for dinner.
We don't have record players.
Is so, there a romantic song on
there? Yes, yeah, so like Lost Love.
Says, yeah, so, see? See? You guys could slow dance in the living room.
There it is. There is house. But I think they did release also on... Because I actually listened to it on YouTube. Opening theme, really creepy. I was like, yeah, I don't think I can. And so it's worse.
I bet it sounds really good on record.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. And we're going to talk about, because you can still watch Unsolved Mysteries today. It's on reruns. Although they did start a new series of Unsolved Mysteries, which is on Netflix, which is a little bit different than the original Unsolved Mysteries. Because if you remember... The original one would have different segments in a one-hour show. It might be Lost Treasure, it's a murder, and something else. But the new version of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix focuses on one case. They don't do multiple cases.
Is there a host or not?
No, there's no host. No. I've watched a couple episodes of it. It's terrible. It's not something I watch right
now. Yeah.
But it is an option if you're into true crime and you like Unsolved Mysteries kinds of things. It's out there, so.
Good to know.
Okay, so we're going to talk about three different cases tonight. Does anybody recognize any of these people on the screen? Anybody know anything about these cases? All right, so we're going to start off by talking about the first one is a guy named Donald Eugene Webb. So he's the first. And he was just a bad all-around guy, just career criminal, worked with the Whitey Bulger mob scene in England. He did a little bit of everything. Including counterfeiting, breaking, and robbery, grand larceny, and car theft.
Okay. What's missing? What's
the thing? I know. He also had some legitimate jobs.
Quite the resume.
Yeah, I think he was a butcher. And he did
probably a contractor.
Yeah, probably a contractor.
As we learned from your cards here.
He was dishonorably discharged from the Navy. He enlisted and started serving his time in the Navy. And then did something in the Navy, probably stole something. But he was dishonorably discharged from the Navy, which is not a good thing. And he did actually do some jail time here in New York State. And he was wanted in connection with a robbery that happened in Colony, New York, which if you're familiar with the Albany area, is a suburb of Albany. And that happened in the late 70s. He and an accomplice pretended they were from the city sewer and water department and went to people's houses and then got entry into their houses and then robbed them blind. So he was just an all-around bad guy. But I do want to remember these two. Mugshots over here, because you're going to see those in the comments. So the story of Donald Eugene Webb and why there was that FBI most wanted picture of him at the beginning slide is because of an encounter that he had in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. So in early December of 1980, he was in Saxonburg, which is a city just east of Pittsburgh. And he was, what they think he was doing was casing a jewelry store there. Okay. He was going to rob the jewelry store. And he ended up having an encounter with Greg Adams. Greg Adams served in the Marine Corps and was honorably discharged. He was an undercover police officer in Washington and was looking for a quieter pace, so moved to Saxonburg, where I think he grew up with his family. And on Thursday, December 4th, 1980, he was heading out of the police station on his last patrol before he was starting his scheduled vacation. And so at 2:30 on that day, he observed a white Mercury Cougar run a stop sign. And so he pursued the vehicle. He's pursuing the case or pursuing the car. At that part of Pennsylvania is like a little hilly. So
yeah.
He probably just lost. But eventually found the car this white Mercury Cougar was turning around in a parking lot, in Agway parking lot. The car is turning around this way, and he pulled in. So now the cars are pointing at each other. And what they said on Unsolved Mysteries was, like, police officers are trained to make vehicle stops from being they don't pull up in front of you.
They pull behind you
when they approach you.
So it was unfortunate how it all came together.
So he didn't have the opportunity. He's looking at the car. He gets out of his car. He walks around to the other side of the car in front of him and probably says to him, hey, you ran a stop sign. That's why I'm stopping you. Or that's why I'm making this encounter with you. Do you have a driver's license? So he hands over the driver's license. And as soon as he does that, the driver starts shooting at Greg Adams.
So was he wanted at this point for something?
He was wanted in connection with that robbery.
Oh, that's right. Okay. All right. I didn't know if he served his time already.
No, he had served time for another. He was just a bad guy.
All right.
Just constantly committing crimes in jail, out of jail, committing more crimes. And I don't even know why he picked this place in Pennsylvania. It's out of the way. It's a town of 1,500 people. So it's really small. And maybe that's why he chose it. I'm not sure. They begin shooting at each other. Greg Adams fires his weapon at the guy, the driver. And eventually they are both fighting over Greg Adams' gun. And they got into a physical fight. And the driver of the car beat Greg Adams basically almost to death.
Wow.
And he was found by a neighbor, somebody who lived by the Agway station. Her son had heard the fight happening outside and was like, I think something's going on. There's this fist fight going on outside. There's gunshots. And so they call the ambulance. The mom stays with Greg Adams. They take him to the hospital. He dies on the way to the hospital. He doesn't make it there. So the name on the ID that they found, so he's gone. The police come to investigate the scene. They find this ID and it has the name Stanley John Portis on it. Okay, great. This is our starting point.
Yeah.
Let's figure out who that is. Who is it? So they investigate who that is and they find out that he's been dead since 1948.
Okay.
So, yeah, hard to drive a car in 1980 when you've been dead since 1948. And so they're like, okay, that somebody is using this name. Who could it be?
They know what car they were looking for.
Yeah, they were looking for a white. The neighbor went out and saw him as he was dying. She saw the white Cougar pulling out of the Agway parking lot. So they're also looking for that car, too, but they're trying to figure out who Stanley John Portis. They discover that Stanley John Portis' wife, Lillian, married a man named Donald Eugene Webb. And he had taken on many aliases, but he had taken on Stanley John Portis' identity.
Yeah.
He was. And these two mugshots down here, those are the pictures that were taken in Albany when he was arrested. And this is pretty famous. I don't know if anybody here remembers when you would go to the post office. And they would have all the FBI most wanted pictures. So I feel like I remember seeing this one because I was just like, office and if I'm going to see it. There you go. They came to pick up his mail. So he was added to the FBI's most wanted list in May of 1981. And he is the second longest serving person on the FBI most wanted list. He was taken off the list in 2007. Victor Manuel Garena is currently the longest serving person on the FBI's most wanted list. And he was involved in, it was an armored car robbery supporting some, I think it's under terrorist activities.
So, that was probably from a long time ago. So this guy's probably dead somewhere.
The crimes were probably committed 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So nothing is heard or seen from Donald Eugene West for decades. But the FBI never stopped looking. And they had a couple of near misses. The greatest picture over here, but there was a newspaper did a whole story on him. And so after he is involved in this encounter, Greg Adams shot Donald Webb in the leg. And they knew that because there was blood. They found the Mercury Cougar 2 weeks later in Rhode Island, and there was blood in the car, and there was also blood at the scene that did not match Greg Adams. And so after he shot, I read that he actually ended up in a hospital in New Hampshire under an assumed name. And nobody, even though there was an FBI, everybody's looking for this guy, they didn't find him. So he's in the hospital for 4 weeks, getting his leg
Well,
fixed.
This was probably at a time where the police departments didn't really talk
to each
other.
This is 1980s.
Yeah.
So before, there's no internet. They're probably doing a lot of this by teletype. This is maybe faxy. This is definitely not the kind of technology that we have today. So after he's released from the hospital, he ends up in Montreal, and he's almost caught there, escapes Montreal. Then they think they are on his trail again in Miami, and he escapes the grasp. He just gets away before he's caught. So as I was researching this story, discovered that the FBI in 1993 put out a set of FBI Most Wanted trading cards, which is what this is. This is the actual Donald Eugene trading card. So he was the number one card in the deck. So he was the number one. And I also...
This is the one you were trying to get.
That was the one that I really wanted
to... 80 packs
of
this stuff.
Never had any. I was like, wait a minute, there's trading cards for FBI Most Wanted? How did I not know this? So I bought a whole bunch of those packs.
And this person that you're probably buying it from is, what is with this
what
woman?
What is up with this woman in New York who's buying ridiculous amounts of FBI trading cards?
Because she's looking for Donald Eugene Webb.
Donald, yeah, I ended up with three of his cards. But I have, these are all duplicate cards. Anybody is also interested in trading cards and the FBI. You can take any of them that you want.
You want to pass that around?
Yeah, we can pass this around. You want to pass this? So take it out of the plastic case. You can buy them on eBay, but I was like, I'm actually finding my. Maybe I'll sell these on eBay.
Yeah.
I do have a complete case. I have a complete set of one, the one thing that turns in the set. I'm just like,
yeah, I know. No autographs, as far as I know.
No, that's, I have, so, like the other carts.
Are any of these people still alive in prison?
Yes. Can, probably, yes.
Can you go, can you go visit them and ask them to sign your trading card?
No.
To Carrie.
No.
All the best.
Stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so that's the FBI trading card. And then in 2017, the FBI obtained some new pictures of him and released, this is the updated pictures of him. This just didn't come out right on there. But that was in 2017.
So they were still trying.
They were still looking for him. That's what, 37 years later. So they never gave up looking for him and wanted to find him. They wanted to get a conclusion to this case. As I said, they never stopped looking for him. Greg Adams' widow and they had two kids always wanted to know what happened. Where was Donald Webb? And they reached out through the FBI to Lillian Webb, his wife, and she would never say anything. Nobody ever said anything for decades. So in around 2015, 2016, the FBI looked into one of Lillian Webb and owned two houses outside of Boston. And this one in the picture here, they found what they called a secret room in the house. And it was not a room that was in the plans when the house was originally. Mm-hmm. This was added on to the house. And this is a picture of what it looks like. So it was in a closet. And it was a room. It's not very big. They described it as being as big as a shower.
Yeah.
But that was where he would go when he wanted to hide or they needed to hide him. And there was actually a room like that in both of the houses that she had.
Oh, wow. So she obviously transferred him in the car, too.
And another interesting thing that I read about the house was that they had trees in the backyard, which basically made a canopy over the backyard. So really, you could not see in the backyard. And that was probably so he could go outside and be protected from anybody seeing him. And once Greg Adams' family found out about the secret room, they filed a lawsuit against his wife.
Yeah.
To find out, to just to get information about what happened.
Like a civil suit?
It was a civil suit. Yeah, it says federal lawsuit. I didn't save this. It's actually a civil suit, not a federal suit.
And did they have, I'm sorry, did the Webbs have kids?
They did. They had a son. She had children from a previous marriage.
What the heck they were thinking? Why doesn't dad ever go anywhere?
I know, exactly. Why do we have to make a room in the house to hide dad? Why? Well, everybody around him, him, his wife. His
Unless son. They knew. Maybe they all knew.
Yeah, but his mom associated, they all did that. Nobody talked about him ever. So with the promise of immunity from any type of prosecution, Lillian finally came clean about what happened to her husband. And he died in 1999. Mm-hmm. He had suffered a couple strokes. He had one in 1997. And then he had another one. And he said to her, dig a hole in the backyard. To bury me in the backyard when I die. And that's exactly what she did. She dragged him out. She dug a hole. She dragged him out there. And she buried him behind a shed. And yeah, she eventually showed the FBI where he was buried.
So
the second stroke.
Or like,
he also had a lifetime of leg problems from being shot.
Yeah.
That never healed or corrected itself. But the FBI dug up his body and confirmed that it was him. And it's just really, I think, for the Adams, for Gray Adams yeah. and his wife. It's, at least there's a conclusion.
Yeah, I just think of all the trouble the Webbs went through. And it's so exhausting. So exhausting to worry at any given moment that they might get caught.
Yeah.
Or he has some kind of medical ailment. He can't even go to the hospital.
He can't go to the hospital. Because by 1990s, that would be if he shows up at the hospital.
Yeah.
I think they would have been able to figure out who he was. So they did get some closure, and there's a permanent reminder. Whoops, in Saxonburg to him, to Greg Adams. And for a while, they gave a scholarship to Lingle High School as well. He was definitely never forgotten by the people in the FBI mm-hmm. and the people in Saxonburg. So that's one of those cases that you would watch on the series, and they would show reruns. And now when they show the reruns, they won't go. He was found and was
Benedict.
Almost 20 years before she even came to sweat.
Yeah, right.
So it was crazy, so... Anyways, I passed down. So let's move on to the case.
Is the next one better?
Down.
Yeah, I know.
And I will say the third one is definitely better.
Did you arrange it that way?
No.
Okay. Is it also part of your trading cards?
None of these next two cases are not involved.
Okay.
Yes, so unfortunately. So now we're going to take a look at Gloria Louise Schultz, who was a resident of Scottsdale, Arizona. And she had a little bit of a drinking problem, drinking and driving. And on the night of Friday, actually it was July 27th
of the 29th,
she left a Scottsdale bar called Thunder and Lightning and headed northbound on Scottsdale Road. And she was under the influence of both alcohol and marijuana and crossed over the median and ran into a car driven by Angela Mayer, who we're going to talk about in the next slide. And Gloria broke her jaw in the collision. And she was taken to the hospital. She was observed by the ambulance crew and the police as having slurred speech. She was telling them how much she had to drink. She had glassy eyes. She reeked of alcohol and pot. Her blood alcohol level was 0.159. Mm. And for some reason, she was not arrested, nor was she charged with any crime.
What year is this?
1994. Oh. Yep. So she was...
Where did this take place in?
Still
Arizona. Oh, Arizona.
So let's... who was a 21-year-old college student. She was finishing up her, she had just finished up her
junior year.
And she was very involved in students against drunk driving in high school because she had a friend who was killed by a drunk driver. And she led the group in high school. She was very active in that. She told everybody that she knew if ever needed a ride, they were ever incapacitated and they couldn't drive, just to call her and she got them. So she was actually home from college celebrating her mom's birthday. Mm-hmm. Birthday was on Friday, July 27th. So that day, she and her mom had gone out to dinner and they had gone to see. They went to see Forrest Gump.
Huh.
So at 10 o'clock, she got a call from a friend who needed a ride home. So she told her mom she'd be home shortly and she got behind a little fur car and headed towards Scottsdale. She was killed instantly by Vandrup Gloria Schultz. As I was researching this, there was some things in here I never heard anything about legals in this case. Because it ends up, this person, this is what she did. She's on the run, nobody knows where she is. So in researching this, it became pretty obvious that every possible thing could have gone for Gloria Schultz. Like everything. The deputy Maricopa County attorney who was handling her case was well-known in the community for totally botching another drunk driving case. She was indicted by a grand jury on manslaughter and endangerment charges, and she was issued summons instead of a warrant. So apparently, and I read this in this article, she had been issued a warrant that would have required...
Okay.
She was summons, which didn't require that.
Okay.
And she was
issued... So she could be free?
She didn't have to post any bond. Any bail. She kept her driver's license. And my understanding is the only way they would issue a summons is his office. You should issue a summons for it. The only request from the judge was that she had to get drug tested 3 times a week to make sure that she was drinking or doing drugs and that she had to check in by phone every week.
And this was what, leading up to the court?
Leading up to the trial.
Okay.
And she continued to work, took jobs, lived alone in Scottsdale in a house that was owned by her parents. Mm. They have strong ties, which is one. When people look back on this case, they're like, why would you not require a bond for somebody who has no ties to this?
Yeah.
Obviously, she's there. There's nothing that's keeping her here. She wasn't married. She had no children. She was working from home type stuff. She didn't own her house. She was in her parents' house. So they ended up switching prosecutors in October of 1994, and the judge was also replaced. And the date of the trial was changed 6 times.
Almost next year.
And a final trial date was set for September 25th, and Gloria Schultz was a no-show at a pretrial hearing on September 15th.
It's not good.
No. Like I said, everything that could have possibly benefited, everything was tilted towards her. Whereas the Monger families, our daughter, my daughter is dead, and she was murdered by this person driving drunk, and this person still has their driver's license.
Yeah, they're living with
nothing life. There's nothing tying them to this case. And beginning of September, the same month that she was going to have the trial, she has 5 appointments for her drug tests. District Attorney's Office, just a heads up, this person has not been showing up for her drug tests. And around the same time, she was offered a plea deal in exchange for a guilty plea, and then she'd be looking at less time in prison. And that's what Angela's family spurred her to leave. She knew they were really seriously going to try to get her to serve jail time, and she didn't think she needed to, or didn't have any time. So she left. They also found out that she maxed out all her credit cards and sold 2 of her cars in September. So around the same time, she's skipping out on all the tests and stuff. And her parents sold the house that she was living in for cash.
So her parents helped her.
So in 2001, she was tried in absentia for the murder and was found guilty of vehicular manslaughter. Now, they think that they had seen her. They had indications that she was living in Sims, but they could not track her down. And in 2018, they issued an enhanced photo of what she might look like in 2018.
That's interesting. I never heard of being found guilty.
In absentia? Yeah. They just held the trial without her. They went forward with that trial. She didn't show up. It was 6 years after she was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And they held it without her.
Huh?
And she was found guilty.
Okay.
And Angela's mother passed away in 2021 without a resolution to the murder of her daughter, which is sad. But then, so just remember this day.
Here.
So, this is a woman named Kate Dooley, and she lived in Yukon Territory in Canada. And she was very private. She was very well known for doing awesome fireworks. That was her. Put together really memorable, great fireworks displays. And she did have a DUI conviction in 2009 and was taken to jail and fingerprinted. But she died of cancer in 2019. And this is actually, there was an anonymous tip made to Gloria's brother, multiple tips, that Kate Dooley was her sister. They did some fingerprints and they confirmed that this was Gloria Schultz. And this just happened last year that they confirmed that she had been on the run. She ended up in Canada. So people were like, how did she cross the border? Because her fingerprints would have been. Or they would have been. So she must have had, she'd gotten a fake identity and she was Kate.
Sounds like she had some time to prepare.
Yeah. And her family says they had nothing to do with her. They did not have any contact with her after she fled. I don't believe that. I think they, where she was, the parents, and helped her financially. So anyways, that was a case that was just resolved last year. And she never served in jail. Which I know is also gone. But
the what they're doing with their lives then. You can't live your life with this hanging over you.
Yeah. She was incredibly private and did not let people get to know her or certainly at her house.
It would have been better for her just to do the plea deal, serve her time,
exactly.
and then she could just, maybe she didn't care to be with her family.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
but
so she lived
that's
the
hard
next
for me to understand.
25 years as this person and just escaping all responsibility for crime.
She worked.
Yeah, she worked as a house painter, fireworks shows, just
can't shit.
Yeah. So that just resolved itself last year and this happened.
So you never know who your neighbor is. Is your neighbor into fireworks shows?
Okay, so this next one is a little difficult because it's sexual assaults, but I promise you it has better.
Okay.
The last one is the Boston Strip Mall Rapist. This is the original police sketch. Out in December 1989, two women who were working at a hit-or-miss clothing store, which is a
dress barn.
Dress barn. Let's call it that. Yeah. So they're working together at this clothing store in Framingham, Massachusetts, and they were assaulted by a guy who just walked in. He was very clean cut, just looking for.
It says clean smelling.
Clean smelling. They gave more obsession.
Oh, yeah, there it's on.
That was one thing that.
Nasally voice.
So he, this was multiple. He did both robberies and sometimes was bold. And multiple people said the same thing, that he wore obsession. Obsession for men? What is it? Or obsession?
I think so. I thought that was a women's perfume, but okay. Yeah. Maybe it's both.
Maybe. Yeah. But that was what they described. They're like, yeah.
I'm surprised they knew. They knew by they smelling knew it.
Yeah, they knew the
quality. Does anyone else know the smell of obsession?
Maybe that's big in the Boston area. I don't know. So.
It was big in the 1980s.
This was in 1989. So he comes in. He's very plain, shiny, kind of like a decent guy. Nothing about him made them feel uncomfortable. And after some chit-chat, then he pulled out a gun and he threatened both the police and ended up assaulting both of them. And he escaped and he's on the run for...
And he must have done this elsewhere.
He was... No. Yeah. So multiple attacks happened in and around the Boston area in late 1989 and into 1990, January 1990. And they were able to tie him to 9 different robberies. And there was a joint task force composed of multiple local agencies, master. And they came up with some things that they thought they were the characteristics of him. He was professional looking and unassuming. There was nothing about his appearance that made people be like, this is the drama on this guy. He would seek out stores and strip malls near highways. So there was
a way escape
on the road. He would look for businesses with only an entry. So you just come in and out the same door. And he did surveillance of the store that picked places where there were one or two. And these are different police steps, which don't really look like the same person. But those were all, because I feel like this one, that one, they're all ones. But they must have all run the same clones.
Did you take that still off of Unsolved Mysteries? It looks like it.
Okay, so
it looks dated.
About this case, it's when the mysteries originally aired from 1987 to early 2000s. And then 2000 panned. A company called FilmRise bought the rights to most of the mysteries.
Okay.
And they took all the segments and compiled them in different ways. What you're watching on episode 1 of the Unsolved Mysteries to watch now might not have been what was in the show.
Okay.
And some of the segments did not make it into the reboots. This was one of them.
Okay.
And sometimes it was because the statute of limitations were up.
Oh.
Or sometimes it was because it was already solved. And they There was at least one segment where somebody was interviewed and it was aired. And he said, if you ever hear that segment again, I'll see. Because he looked like the biggest bull. And they never aired that one again. And then there was other ones where the people involved were just.
Can you find that segment now? Do like everything now.
Yeah. You can probably find it, on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
There's this very famous Unsolved Mysteries case involving a haunted bunk bed.
That sounds like a legit TV show.
It's very 1980s. And when you watch very early Unsolved Mysteries, a lot of satanic panic, if anybody remembers that from the 80s. Yeah. So the haunted bunk beds, they were too embarrassed to have. I don't blame them. Anyways. So it turns out that 5 women were.
Okay. So what happened in that bunk bed?
So this family in Wisconsin bought a bunk bed. A
garage sale or something.
And as soon as they bought the bunk bed and put it in their house, kids were getting sick and all kinds of paranormal things were happening in their house.
That's what I would do. I would blame whatever I just bought at a garage sale, saying that it was haunted.
I'm just telling you what the segment was. And so then they had the minister came in. He felt like it was demonic possession of the bunk bed. I am not making this up. And so they ended up.
Oh, okay. Where is it? I wonder where it is.
The state. A landfill. And they were like, no, we can't have this bunk bed anymore. There was.
On the first.
What's that? I know.
It's them having a priest come in.
I think they liked it. They liked the idea of the bunk bed.
They really tried to make it work.
Yeah, they tried.
They really did.
Yeah.
So that's a true story. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
It was like Rhinelander, Wisconsin, which I've actually been to. I didn't know anything about them.
There's no bunk bed on the side of the road somewhere.
I found it.
No, yeah.
Did you find it?
The haunted bunk bed.
If you were to watch.
Yeah.
Oh. That one didn't make the rerun.
And you kept watching the show.
Anyways.
Did you at the time? You might have.
I still remember watching that when it first came out. But I do remember watching. But it's like when you watch the show and you're like, I don't know. I would have been in the 80s. I've been 17 to watch this. But now it's. Okay, all right, back to this. Can we go with on?
I'm thinking, but yeah, go ahead. I might have some follow-up questions at the end.
I won't.
I know. Why did you do a segment on the haunted bunk bed?
Think the same about it. It's gone. It went to the landfill.
So we think.
Everybody's moved off.
Or so we think. It's probably in someone's house right now. We can get.
Never stopped getting bunk beds for our kids.
I bet you've thought about it, though. Or
I don't even remember seeing that episode. Back to this case. So this person, there were five.
Sorry. I know it's not. I'm just picturing the bunk bed.
Why did I mention the bunk bed?
I don't know.
Okay, so there were five women who were assaulted. And this all happened around Christmas, 1989, and then into January of 1989. And then literally nothing happened on this case. Nothing. Until 2021. And there was a story that came out that there was this huge backlog of rape testing in the Massachusetts police. So the victims in mass hit and miss store were really pressuring them to reinvestigate the kids. If they had not already, there's been a lot of DNA technology advances. And they were like, this is a prime case. Take another look at it. So they and the Massachusetts Police Crime Lab works with a genetic genealogy company in Virginia that assigns a match. And one of the things we've been able to do at Crime Fund is discussion about how genetic genealogy is used and what they do with it. So basically, they have a name, Stephen Paul Veal, who they're looking for. And they find him because his son and his niece had done one of these 23andMe or something. Yeah. And they're able to track however they do that. They're able to figure out this is the guy that.
I'm sorry, what year is this?
2021.
Oh.
Starting point. This is 2024-ish.
This is very recent.
Now they're looking for this guy. So this is a picture of him from 1995, which looks like, to me, looks like the same hair, same face. But they only offer him up to $5,000. It's nothing. Insult.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's all the women that they only know about.
They're convinced they find out more about this guy. He has just been committing crimes all over the place. So they start looking for him in 2024. They know he's lived previously in Las Vegas and Los Angeles. He's mostly out on the West Coast. He had some loose ties to organized crimes. His big thing was he was just a con. He was conning people out of hundreds of thousands of dollars. They end up finding him in 2024. And they find him on a luxury yacht. It was his
That's him.
Here. This is him. They found him on this luxury yacht. It's called the Tior. And it's a million dollar. They put the people that were at the marina with him put so much money and so much time.
Who's they?
His wife or whoever was.
Living? He wasn't.
He was living in the marina, yeah. And he. He's being watched.
Sure.
And
he probably had that feeling his whole life, to be honest.
Yeah, a lot of these
people. How can you not? You got to be on high alert at all times.
Yeah, exactly. So he either feels like he's being watched or knows he is. And he takes and he leaves a 60-mile police
station. So in a wheelchair there?
Yes.
Okay. So
he was driving the car. This is his car. This was the car he led the police chase on. And they're driving all over the place. Now, while he was trying to escape from police, he had tried to make a connection with someone of his a friend or a work connection or something. That this guy's involved in a dry cop, and this guy's throw a briefcase in the window.
Okay, like an action movie. Yeah,
he threw it.
He watched too many Fast and Furious movies.
Eventually, he gave this up. So they get him out. This is them getting him out of the car. And when they got him out, they found out that he had disfigured all of his fingerprints.
Ooh.
He doesn't have any more fingerprints, so he couldn't be Because they realized that when they went to fingerprint him, they were like, there's
good thing he's got DNA.
Yeah, there's nothing there. So I'm hoping to show this clip. What's there's a court. A court. Survivor. It was a word how bar
core bar.
He just reminded me, if any of you are from the Golden State Killer, and who he, when he was finally caught, then he was out living his life, but then when he was caught, so, I must not have said, I had a funny rubber stick meme.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Does anybody have any questions?
So did his wife get in trouble for anything?
No.
Was he aware of
it? I haven't even read anything about his wife, so I don't know.
You gotta be wondering where he's getting all this money from for a yacht.
He just...
Did she know? Is my question.
Oh, sure. So he was actually under indictment for crimes, believe in Arizona, and those charges were drops into Massachusetts.
Not charges for assaults,
crimes. He is currently in Massachusetts, held without bail. Interesting, he claimed to be, when he was first arrested.
Yeah.
He claimed that he had $1.5 million. And he was talking about having his attorney and stuff. And then we're having his own attorney. And then it turned out, I think he has a state.
Yeah, it's the one time.
It just, it may have happened one time. And luxury cars.
Three.
I don't know. All I read about was that were assaulted at that own store. I know one of the other cases involved. He showed up at the medical walk-in on Christmas and then proceeded to assault that office on Christmas.
No.
So he just abandoned.
So has anything else come out about him and his crimes? Anything super recent or anything?
No, just he's in jail. He's out bond.
Yeah.
The TV station's a boss. A lot of how they found after all these years, and I think the transcripts. Oh, yeah, and to be gentlemen, to read the story that all of these kids never tested. They were
Yeah.
sitting there for decades. I think that's really.
Yeah. Well, then the $5,000 reward
Oh,
plate.
that's so
I know.
insulting. That's crazy.
You tell it wasn't a priority.
No, it was.
It wasn't.
Here's a shame. I don't think the. I think the story about these rape kits being tested, it's all over the place. I
Yeah.
feel like that's something that's kind of a crafty. They just,
Yeah.
that's good text. I don't know if that becomes a priority for everybody's assault. The one thing that's nice about this, he's still alive. He's in jail and stuff, going anywhere. It's justice, which I think is awesome. And they've been living with this. And Greg Adams against that. So I think when Greg Adams was killed, I think his two or three, and this one was months. The older son says he does have some independent memories.
Oh, okay.
And I did have something on here. You can't watch Unsolved Mysteries if anybody's interested in watching the show. You can watch it on Pluto TV and Bond. They have a live channel where you can just pop in. And they'll put them on demand. So if you want to watch a specific episode, we do that.
Everyone, come back next time with your favorite Unsolved Mystery episode and talk to Carrie.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
To Webb's son in regards to being secure.
And that might have been worth would she have a name? Maybe she. He has to. Too. I didn't read anything about that. I've never really read anything about their son. He was casually mentioned in an article, one of the articles said. It was just crazy when they, I remember seeing something about him in 2017. Like, oh, room.
Yeah,
A room
yeah.
where you can go in and
Living
help yourself.
quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, showers. He
You sleep in there too?
couldn't have because it was.
I would feel like that's when you're most vulnerable, right? Like when you're going to sleep at night.
So this is the this stall here, and locked them in. It was in a closet, you could tell, and so you wouldn't have been able to see that if he would have gone in there. He locks it. They put something in front of that. You wouldn't even know there's.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure how many poking around or something about like they pushed on the wall or something.
Oh, I see. It is inside a, you said inside a
It's
closet.
inside a closet. Yes. They're ready.